glad you're here. We're glad you're here. Fellowship, sweet up. Knowing you're near.
Hi, listening friend. It's June 18th, 2013. Thank you, God. We have Alan Fadling for the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. We're going to talk some more about his book, An Unhurried Life, Following Jesus' Rhythm of Work and Rest. It's an InterVarsity Press publication, ivpress.com, ivpress.com. Alan Fadling received his Master of Divinity from Fuller Theological Seminary. He's the Executive Director of The Journey, a ministry of the Leadership Institute in Orange County, California. His heart and passion is training Christian leaders to integrate spiritual formation and leadership development. He's a certified spiritual director. He's taught courses at Hope International University. He's currently a part of a planning team for a new church called The Following in Orange County, California. He lives in Mission Viejo, California with his wife, Jem, and their three sons. So hurry rushes towards the destination and fails to enjoy the journey. Can I get a testimony, Alan?
Well, when I start the book saying I'm a recovering speed addict, I emphasize the recovering. I am certainly not writing this book as someone has arrived and I find this easy. It is a continual challenge. And here's another place where my wife, Jim, helps me so much. This is how she lives. She enjoys the journey. She's not in a big hurry to reach the destination like I am. But what I find is that in my hurry, I end up running past so many good things that I think God's prepared in advance for me. And I've got my agenda and I'm rushing to put it together and get it done as fast as I can. And I think I'm missing out on a lot of opportunities as a result.
There's so many things about your book, as I mentioned yesterday, and if you missed the interview, it is archived at greatnewsradio.org under our archive programs link. The helpful questions you ask at the end of each chapter, your unhurried time, and you have us kind of think through something that we learned through that chapter or a way that we can apply it or some steps to take. So I so appreciate that because it sometimes seems that if we slow down, we can be viewed as being lazy. Talk about that a little.
Well, in the beginning of the book, I talk about living in a culture that values hurry. And it's just embedded in the way we think. If you plug the word slow into your dictionary, like your Microsoft Word dictionary, the meanings that pop up are almost all negative in tone, like sluggish and time-consuming and even stupid. So who wants to be those things? I think the idea that we might be unhurried and that might actually be a good way to live, that it might actually be a way of following Jesus, that actually it might surprise us as a more productive way to live. I mean, for example, if Jesus is actually unhurried, at least this is his way of life, the heart that he has, nobody's going to argue that Jesus is lazy. Nobody can read the pages of the gospel and say, Jesus sat around in a lazy boy watching, ESPN or something. He lived in those 3 years of active ministry. My goodness, he produced more than I may produce in my whole life. And so I want to make a connection between being unhurried and living fruitfully. I don't think necessarily everything we do in our busy, hurried way is necessarily as eternally fruitful as we'd like it to be.
I know in your second chapter, entitled An Unhurried Apprentice, I gave three asterisks to the question at the end of the chapter, and I mentioned this on yesterday's program. I have post-it notes throughout this book, a lot of things underlined, 1, 2, and 3 asterisks, and this was a 3 asterisk, which is like apply, share, talk about, think through, tell other friends, but it says, what opportunities to simplify your life might Jesus be inviting you to consider so that you can walk more closely with him and share the riches of that journey with other like-minded Christ followers. And I'm like, oh, Lord, I just need to keep reading this book, thinking about it. And reading the book and thinking about it, really, it's helping engage me with God. I mean, I appreciate your words and think they're somewhat inspired because you spend time praying and talking with God. But as I connect with your book and your words, I connect with God, and I've been unhurried in many new ways as I just kind of think through thoughts and say, Lord, you know, what opportunities can I take to simplify, to slow down, to spend quality time with you? Because I'm one that I get a lot of things swirling in my brain. And unless I get closure, they're lodged in there. And unless I get them resolved, they're in there along with all these other new things. And what I find is they compete with my attention with God. Even when I pray, I'm still thinking about those things. And it's like, Lord, help me sort through those things so that when I spend this quality time with you, not only is it unhurried, but it's productive and it's restful.
Yeah, I think it's possible that we might find that in following Jesus, we could be unhurried as he is in the pages of the gospel, unhurried enough to care for the person who crosses our path. You know, think of how many times they're on their way somewhere, at least that's what Jesus said, and the disciples are trying to push them along because we've got an agenda, and Jesus will stop and frustrate those poor 12 and care for the person there on the side of the road or at the gate or whoever it was, that he was unhurried enough to care, and he seemed to be aware of the opportunities that were coming across his path. In a sense, the work that the Father was wanting to do through him along the way. And I find that in my hurry, I'm not as aware of those opportunities as they come. And we talk sometimes about divine appointments, and many of us have had such experiences. Something happens in our life we didn't plan, we didn't expect, and yet it has God's fingerprints and God's favor all over it. What I'm finding is that as I cultivate a more unhurried way of life, I seem to notice those opportunities a little more readily than I used to.
Mm-hmm. Now, somebody's probably thinking to themselves, but if I become unhurried, might I tend to start being lazy? And so when does unhurry become maybe unholy also?
Yeah, I wrote the chapter about productivity because I knew that would be one of the deep reactions to the idea of being hurried, either a concern about laziness and being less productive, or that this would result in being less engaged in the life God's inviting us to live and the work God's inviting us to do. But actually, I found that a lot of times my hurried way of life is actually a lazy way of life. I'm failing to be as attentive as I might be to the one I claim to be serving. And so I'm losing touch with my King, with the Lord, and I'm frantically doing many things I think that he wants me to do. I mean, can you imagine if someone were to ask you, you know, how are you? What would happen if you answered, well, you know, I'm really happy to say, you know, that today my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I think some people would look at you like you were nuts.
Yeah.
And yet Jesus might actually answer the question that way. Again, I don't think our busyness always equates to fruitfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an equation we assume. The more I do equals the more I produce. But in eternal terms, that's not always an accurate equation, I don't think.
Yeah, talk a little more about that hurried sickness that many of us, most of us have, because I think we all generally answer, how's it going? Oh, busy as ever, you know? And that really is a sickness that we need to overcome with God's help.
Yeah, I find this is my struggle. Again, if you ask somebody how they are, as you said, a very common response is busy. And as I think about that, I think it's kind of a mixed, we have mixed emotions about that word. At one level, we're saying busy, and we're a little frustrated, we're a little tired, we're sort of wishing it wasn't so busy. And yet, some other part of us is saying, well, now they're going to know how important I am, how wanted I am, how valuable my time is, because I'm busy, you know. And again, I'm not arguing for, you know, doing nothing. I'm not suggesting we all just sit around as though unhurried were some life of wealthy leisure where I just don't need to do anything. I'm talking more about a way of living, a way of heart, where maybe I could be very, very active, very, very engaged, and in the midst of that, unhurried, that I might have an unhurried heart. And again, I mentioned in our conversation yesterday that, you know, I found that stepping away for times of solitude and silence helped me remember that my identity is not established in the things I do and the things I acquire and the way people see me. My identity, and most Christians, I think, would agree with this, at least in theory, my identity is really rooted in that relationship I have with God through Jesus, and that I'm beloved, and what better identity could I have than that? But in my hurry, that voice ringing in my ear, you're my beloved son or daughter, I'm pleased with you. The rush of my life begins to drown that voice out. And I just begin to believe that I need to accomplish more if I want to still be valuable. I need to cultivate the good opinion of others through all that I do if I want to feel like my life has meaning. Mm. But actually, good work happens when I step into it from a place of confidence, from a place of fullness, from a place of security, that this is already true. And now I get to go out from this place of fullness, and I get to do all kinds of good things that God's prepared ahead for me to do. Hmm. I find I do better work that way.
Hmm. And as disciples of Jesus and as ambassadors for him, he's kind of our model. And he learned a lot about slowing down his pace through times in the desert, living an unhurried life by his pace. So talk a little about how Jesus modeled it perfectly for us.
Yeah, isn't it interesting if you read the gospel story that Jesus is baptized, he hears the Father's voice. And then it says in, for example, Luke 4, it says that full of the Spirit, he was led by the Spirit, and you're just waiting for what comes next. What? Led by the Spirit to a great ministry? Led by the Spirit to, you know, heartfelt worship? Led by the Spirit to what? He's full of the Spirit. What's coming next? I can't wait to find out.
Hmm.
He's led by the Spirit into the wilderness.
Hmm.
Really? Wilderness? So 40 more days he's not doing ministry. He's being tried. He's being tested. He's being tempted. And in the book, I talk about how I think those temptations are really calling into question, one, that voice of the Father he hears at the baptism. You really are my son. I love you. I'm pleased with you. And out in the desert, he's fasting and he hasn't eaten. And the temptation comes to turn some stones into bread. Hey, you sure the Father really loves you? You're looking pretty hungry. Maybe you're not as beloved as you think you are. And so Jesus resists those temptations, which are, you know, an echo of our first father and mother's hurried response to that very first temptation. The other place where I see Jesus modeling this for us is in little places in the gospel that we often rush right past, like a line that says, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray. That's a very interesting description. And I think, you know, if I'm a follower of Jesus, I wonder what it would look like to follow him into this pattern of life that he apparently practiced, that often he withdrew from the crowds, from the opportunities, even from the momentum, who knows? And he went to lonely places to pray. And I don't imagine him going to those places as though prayer was one more thing on his to-do list. It was almost a thing not on his to-do list. It was a break from his to-do list. It was a chance once again to hear that voice he heard at the baptism, reminding him once more in the midst of all that he was doing, that he's beloved, that he's pleasing to the Father.
You mentioned the story of the Good Samaritan and what we can learn from that, because so often, as you mentioned earlier, we miss out on those divine appointments that God is setting up for us to be useful and used of him, but we might miss them. But what can we learn from that Good Samaritan story?
Well, you know, when I was working on this book, one of the things I did do was just read the Gospels, and I came across that story, and it struck me as a story about the unhurried nature of love. You know, the two religious leaders, I would argue, were sort of in a hurry to get to wherever they were heading. And you know, surely maybe they didn't want to be unclean because of the guy on the side of the road. But I think they rush on past where the Samaritan, the good guy in the story, my goodness, how many different levels of unhurry do you see in his response? He stops where the other two wouldn't stop. He takes time to care for this wounded man. He bandages him. He then takes extra time and carries him to a nearby inn. Who knows how long that took? And then he spent the night. I imagine he planned to be somewhere else that night than in an inn caring for a wounded man. And then he gives money to see to it that this wounded man is cared for and plans to come back and check on him. We talk about love being unhurried. And, you know, there are a lot of things where speed is good. I mean, technology, I don't know many of us who are going out to upgrade our phones to the Model 3 models back. You know, we want the next model. With technology, speed's the way to go. It helps. You know, you get things done a little more quickly. But love doesn't work on technology speed. Love has its own pace. And I think that story of the Good Samaritan is one great illustration that love really is unhurried. If love is going to be deep and rich and Christ-like, I think it's an unhurried kind of response.
In case you just tuned in, this is day two of my interview with Alan Fadling, author of An Unhurried Life, Following Jesus' Rhythm of Work and Rest, a great publication by InterVarsity Press. You can purchase multiple copies at ivpress.com, or you can find out more about Alan's ministry work at spiritualleadership.com, spiritualleadership.com. Today and yesterday's broadcast is archived at greatnewsradio.org. Also, if you stop by greatnewsradio.org, you'll see a picture of Alan, the book cover, and also at my Facebook postings and the station's Facebook postings, you'll see other references to today and yesterday's broadcasts. Well, Alan, there's just so many things about this book that I've loved, and it's like this is one of those books that I almost can't wait to finish so I can start reading it again. And I think this interview is really helping me, and I appreciate your heart for equipping leaders and just the saints to follow Jesus more practically, intentionally, by slowing down our lives, by engaging in that quiet solitude time where we can rest in Him. And this third chapter, there's a paragraph here that I want to read because it so typifies who I am and how I was thinking about things. But it says, "Today many of us have been so conditioned by efficiency that times of sitting on the porch feel unproductive, irresponsible, lazy, even selfish. We know we need to rest, but we can no longer see the value of rest as an end in itself. It is only worthwhile if it helps us recharge our batteries so we can be even more efficient in the next period of productivity." And that's, I think, how I looked at times where I rested or took a little break just to recharge my batteries so I could be more productive. But that's not always healthy either, is it?
Yeah, you know, one of the places that was a very helpful place of reflection for me, in the chapter on rest, I talked a little bit about this. But that we have a tendency to measure ourselves primarily by the work we do, and then sort of rest supplements that, or it comes next, or comes after. We sort of work, and we collapse into rest. But usually the rest we collapse into in that frame of reference, it's always very restful. It often feels a lot more like an escape. Whereas I think you can make the argument from the scriptures that, you know, in the story of creation, you know, God makes us on the sixth day, and in the way the story goes, the next day He rests, and so do we. So our first full day of life as a creation is rest, not work. I mean, what do we need to rest from? We hadn't done anything yet. And so, you know, the idea that began to dawn on me is that good work is rooted in rest rather than leading to rest. Even the way that the Jewish mind thinks of a day where the first part of a day is not starting at sunrise, but at sunset, that the first part of the day, therefore, is a time of resting rather than the first part of the day being a time of working. And I think beginning to think that rest is actually the place, I think, where our relationship with God is established, and then work becomes the response place where my identity in God is expressed. And I get that backwards all the time. And so I'm trying to do something to prove something that's actually already true. And it's a pretty unproductive perspective that I often struggle with.
You know, when you said the very words, 6 days and then he rested, so man was created and he rested, and you're like, but he hadn't done anything. And what dawned on me is because God says, no, begin with me, rest in me, get to know me, let's spend time together so you can be equipped for the week. And it's like, yeah, we have to begin with rest, and that rest is beginning with time with God.
Yeah, and so then what I find is that starting from those places of restful communion with God, which I think is why he made us in the first place. I mean, when he created us, he already had a lot of servants, you know, these angels. They were there to do his bidding. I don't think he made us first because he needed more servants.
Mm-hmm.
I think he made us because first he wanted friends. He wanted people with whom he could share the love of Father, Son, and Spirit. And I think we forget the reality of that. But when we begin with rest, I think it's a way for us to remember. And then I find that from that place of restful communion, I get all kinds of creative ideas from him about what he's inviting me into. And sometimes they don't look quite exactly like what I thought I was going to be up to that particular day or that particular week or month. I just feel more creative. I feel more energized. I feel more buoyant. I do my work from a place of energy. This last Saturday, we had a 13.5-hour planning meeting. If you've ever been in a planning meeting that long, you would expect at the end of it, you're zonked. I just go home, turn on the TV, and I'm done. Get me out of here.
Yeah.
But one of the things that that we've learned is that when we do that kind of work, we open up spaces, even in the middle of it, as I described yesterday in our conversation. We open up spaces to stop and remember again in whose presence we are and whose work we're doing. We take a moment to remember a line from Scripture that's blessed one of us. We take a moment to just give thanks for what we've received so far. We stop often. We step back into rest. So at the end of that 13.5 hours, I was surprised to find myself leaving refreshed and encouraged and excited for the next step. I think that's possible. I don't think that's unrealistic. And I just think we probably did better work that day in less time than we might have done if we just kept cranking at it 13.5 hours straight.
Well, the book is called An Unhurried Life, Following Jesus' Rhythms of Work and Rest, authored by Alan Fadling. It's by InterVarsity Press, ivpress.com. I highly recommend it, everyone. Buy multiple copies. Don't just buy one. Buy two or three, because when you finish reading it, you're going to want to buy them anyways to give out to friends and family members, your neighbor, your church, your small group. It's called An Unhurried Life. Oh, Lord, help us all in this endeavor to spend more time with you, to slow down our schedules, and just to find those times where we can connect with you. Alan, in closing, I think this would be something that could be maybe very practical for our listener, even this day. Maybe they're driving to work or they're going to contemplate this throughout the week. But how can we begin to live a less hurried life?
I think the simplest, though not necessarily easiest, answer I might give to that question is the only place we can start, any one of us, is exactly where we find ourselves. Maybe feeling very, very busy, but perhaps feeling hungry or a less hurried way. And so the first thing that I would say is I would just talk to Jesus about the hunger that we might have to be less hurried, to be more unhurried, and to talk about what a temptation it is, and to talk with him about what we find hard, and to ask him if he would mentor us in his own unhurried way. I think if we would do that, something specific, something creative, something very simple might come to mind that could be our own next step in this unhurried journey.
Well, I absolutely love your book. Will highly recommend it to anyone I come in contact with, and obviously our Great News Radio listeners. And one unique thing about our listening family, Alan, is that they're prayer warriors. And so I'm going to ask them to be lifting you up in the days ahead as you minister to people, as you help leaders, as you equip people through this book to slow down, to follow Jesus' rhythms of work and rest. The book is called An Unhurried Life. I absolutely love it, everyone, as you can probably tell from the last few weeks as I've talked about this book, and then yesterday and today's broadcast, which are archived if you missed a portion of it at greatnewsradio.org. So thank you, Alan, for being available. Thank you for following up on those intentions that God put on your heart some time ago to write this book, because I have greatly benefited, and I can't wait to reread it.
Thanks, Park. I've really enjoyed our time.
So thanks for listening, everyone. Again, today and yesterday's broadcast is archived at greatnewsradio.org. You'll see the book cover on our website, and you can learn more also about Alan's ministry and the work he does with leaders at spiritualleadership.com, spiritualleadership.com. Thanks for listening. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.